This is the three. At 3 on Wisconsin's Afternoon News.
Number 1, John, Milwaukee's mayor uses veto power to strike out millions in additional funding towards libraries, the fire department, and residency incentives. Just yesterday, Mayor Kevler Johnson struck out the funding, which made it to his desk after passing the Common Council. Now, the Common Council can go back and vote through again and try to overturn this. So this is what the mayor vetoed. Next year's fire department funding to $4 million in borrowing for fire trucks, plus $2 million he originally proposed instead of $8 million total that was approved by the Common Council. He struck out funding to expand Sunday library hours and what would have been an additional 1% increase in residency incentives for city employees to live here. In an open letter to the Common Council members, the mayor asked pointedly, are the changes sustainable? City government must be sensitive to the financial pressures facing our constituents. We actually have Alderman Bregelis, Peter Bregelis, joining us within this hour in the next about 45 minutes.
And, Julia, the second thing is really a bizarre story. It's a tragic story. It's a terrible story. And it's just really strange. It's out of Muskego. Muskego police say that a 39-year-old woman was riding on the back of a motorcycle with a 51-year-old man. He was driving. And a tree fell as they were on the road, and it struck and killed her. So he wasn't injured. But the tree fell on her. She died on the scene. Police say the 51-year-old called 911, stayed on the scene, tried to save her. Families identifying the victim as Stacy Quaid. She was a mother of two, and she was in marketing and a popular bartender in the area at the lodge in Muskego. And now a family friend has set up a GoFundMe page to help with funeral expenses and help support her two children.
Stacy Quaid.
What are the odds? That he didn't get hurt, but it also didn't miss her. What are the odds? Terrible story.
Goodness. Number 3, John, Apple announced its top podcasts of the year. The New York Times, The Daily, was dethroned this year by the Joe Rogan Experience. He took the number 1 spot. The Daily is now in second. I listen to New York Times Daily every day. Number 3 was the Mel Robbins podcast. She's well known for her Let Them theory when it comes to dealing with difficult people. Just let them do what they want. What is your favorite podcast? Do you have a favorite?
I have a couple that I really like. I like the, it's called the Best Couple Podcast. It's a husband-wife team. They've been married for 26 years, and they talk through life and talk through marriage and that sort of thing, about relationships. I like Armchair Expert, the podcast with Dax Shepard. He's the actor. I also like Rogan. I always try to catch Rogan. He's got the best guests. And the Ramsey Show podcast. I listen to a lot of financial podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
I like the Ramsey Show a lot. I like the Clark Howard podcast. It's the world we're in. I love it.
I have Palace Intrigue.
Oh, that's fun.
Guilty Pleasure. And there's, for long story pleasure, if you want to listen to it, To Die For. It's a journey through the dark world of Russian intelligence, where for the first time, a professed sexy spy tells her story.
Ooh, that's interesting, too.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, one of the best podcasts is the Wisconsin's Afternoon News podcast, sponsored by Dave Drake Camp Heating. You can always get it by texting the word WAN. WAN to 855-616-1620. All of our content gets put right there, including the guy we're going to have up next. I'm excited about this interview. Giannis's injury, great perspective. Dr. Patrick Jost, an orthopedic surgeon, is with us up next. And if you don't catch it, you can always catch it on the podcast. It is 3:13. Milwaukee Bucks superstar Giannis Antetokounmpo expected to miss up to 2 weeks with a low-grade left groin strain. What does that mean? How is it treated? How painful is it? Dr. Patrick Jost is an orthopedic surgeon at Orthopedic Hospital of Wisconsin. They're the best in the business. Dr. Jost, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Hey, let's start by having you please define what is a low-grade left groin strain. How are these graded, and what exactly does that mean?
Well, to me, that means it's muscular in nature. The adductor muscles make up the groin. They help with bringing the knee back towards the midline. And they can be strained or sprained, especially in high-impact, high-level athletics. If that's all it is, these kinds of things usually clear up. I think 2 weeks is a reasonable amount of time.
Oh, you do? Okay, because I was worried they were just giving a lowball number. So you think that he'll be okay in 2 weeks?
You know, everybody's injury is different. I see a lot of people with hip problems, and a lot of people are diagnosed with a groin strain because the hip tends to give people groin pain. So if people have a hip injury, they'll come in and say, I pulled my groin. So sometimes these things drag on longer than expected, and people end up finding that they actually have an injury to the hip itself. Now, professional athletes usually get an MRI every time they complain of pain anywhere, so I would expect that that's been ruled out already. But I do see a lot of groin pain that turns out to be a hip or labrum problem.
How's it treated? Is it just rest, or is it other things?
Well, it really depends on the severity. We do see labrum tears that will be minor and heal with just time and rest. Some of them need surgery. There are plenty of professional athletes who've had labrum injuries that they ended up missing a whole season for. Not to get too far ahead of ourselves, at no point has this seemed like that's what it is, but groin pain can present. Labrum tears can present with groin pain, and that sometimes is the initial guess is that it's a muscle strain.
What do you usually see as signs? I've heard some people hear popping, and some people have seen bruising on them.
Yeah, that bruising, I guess, is pretty uncommon from either a groin strain or a labral tear, unless there's actually tearing of the muscle that's relatively superficial. Popping is usually the sign of a new mechanical problem. So, for instance, if the labrum or cartilage actually has a tear in it, people will sometimes be able to recreate a click or a pop that's painful. But a muscle thing usually won't do that. But if there's a real bad tear, you'll see swelling, bruising, and it'll even sometimes track down someone's thigh.
How painful is it?
Well, it can be pretty painful. I think these guys deal with pain all day, every day. So for a guy like that to limp and then the way he fouled somebody to get himself out, I think there was some serious pain there.
Is he sidelined likely because of a pain threshold issue, or with this sort of injury, is it because he could further injure it if he were to keep playing?
Yeah, I think both are true. Imagine if you've got a partial tear of a muscle, and if you don't rest it properly and then you jump, twist, sprint, you can tear that all the way. And now you've got a much bigger problem that takes quite a bit longer to recover. So doctors who take care of professional athletes tend to be pretty cautious with things like that, because you hate to let a guy go back because he's got a good pain tolerance and then he's out for six more weeks.
How common is this in basketball?
It's pretty common. These guys, they're big, they're tall, they're strong, and they're fighting with other people who are big and tall and strong. They move quickly, they're explosive. To be at this kind of a level of success, they really have to move in a way that most of us just can't imagine. So it's pretty common. These kind of muscle injuries are very common.
The NBA, unrelated to the Giannis situation, has had some coaches complaining that there are a lot more soft tissue-ish injuries taking place. They say the schedule's more compact. These guys are playing 80 games, sometimes back-to-back at the high-caliber level that you were just describing. What's your take on that? More soft tissue injuries? Could it be because this schedule gets more compressed?
I think there's a lot to that. I mean, these guys are expected to play two nights in a row, fly overnight, stay in a hotel, then try to warm up again and play again at a high level. This is a tough game, and yes, I think those coaches are right, and they need to protect their players, but at the same time, it's a business, and the teams want to have their star player out on the court as much as possible, so I don't think we've heard the end of that conversation.
So what would Giannis be doing likely over these next 2 weeks to get back to normal?
Well, number one, he's resting a lot. I think there's going to be a lot of treatments. They have pretty amazing resources where they'll be athletic trainers, they'll be physical therapists. They're going to be working on him a lot. But you can only speed up biology so much. If there's been a muscle or even a cartilage tear, there's only so much you can do out externally to the body. You can only inject things. It's not going to change that the biologic healing still takes time.
It seems like in some instances when guys have a hamstring issue or an oblique or something like that, it becomes more likely that they injure it again. Or you hear some players having the same injury through the course of their career. Could this sort of injury reoccur because he got the injury initially?
Yeah, that's a serious concern. That's a really good point. Hamstrings are a really common one where if patients have had a hamstring tear or pull, then they're just sort of waiting for it to happen again, and they're very tentative about it. We've seen some calf injuries, some pretty high-profile ones where patient will have a calf strain or a sprain, and then something terrible happens because they went back with maybe still some discomfort, or maybe their muscle isn't protecting the tendon as well. So absolutely, yes, it can be a risk in the future. It's a little bit less commonly seen in, we'll call them adductor strains or groin strains, but it still definitely can happen.
Orthopedic Hospital of Wisconsin has the best imaging, the best physical therapists, and you deal primarily with guys who are average pickleball players. What's it like if you get a low-grade left groin strain and you don't have the world-class facilities that the Bucks have? How long would someone be out potentially?
I think we're probably, if it's a low-grade strain, it still could be 2 to 4 weeks. I mean, just being realistic, if you and I go and play pickleball against each other, we're not moving the way Giannis is moving. It's still, the biology is the biology. Humans only heal muscle at a certain speed, so probably we're looking at a 2 to 4 week thing.
Dr. Patrick Yost is with Orthopedic Hospital of Wisconsin. Start your journey to feeling better by checking them out. They can help you. The website is ohow.com. Dr. Yost, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
The Transportation Secretary is asking people to dress nicely and say thank you and please when you fly during this busy holiday season. ABC's Alex Stone, he is the politest guy at ABC News. There's no doubt about that.
Please,
he's
and thank
us.
You. Yes, thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
From Los Angeles. Alex, what's this all about?
Yeah, so they put out a video today, and it's the beginning of a new campaign. The Department of Transportation is kicking off, and it's just asking to be mocked by Saturday Night Live. And it's an interesting campaign that Secretary Sean Duffy is going for. So today they launched what is called the Golden Age of Travel Starts With You. And in their presentation, it begins with images and sounds of the 1950s and 60s of luxurious air travel and lots of room on board planes and meals being served and everybody being really dressed up. It was luxurious. People were fancy. You get a little Frank Sinatra.
Come fly with me. Let's fly.
They're showing all these images, and then it devolves into fights on board airplanes today as they talk about what we're dealing with now. Shows a bunch of images from the last couple of years. So in this campaign, they are calling on all of us to restore courtesy and class to air travel to ensure what they say is the safety of passengers, gate workers, flight attendants, and pilots. And it comes as the DOT says that there has been a 400% in-flight outburst increase of outbursts and unruly passengers since 2019. A lot of that was during COVID. You remember every day when we would talk about the mask fights on board and people getting kicked off and the no-fly list and all of that. But Duffy in the video, which has this old classic look filter over it, says he wants you to ask yourself some questions.
Are you helping a pregnant woman put her bag in the overhead bin? Are you dressing with respect? Are you keeping control of your children? Are you saying thank you to your flight attendants and your pilots? Are you saying please and thank you in general? The golden age of travel begins with you.
So the department says it is committed to ushering in a golden age of travel again, and they want the excitement and the manners and relaxation to come back. And I think you're going to have a lot of people saying, good luck with that. That went away a long time ago. The genie's out of the bottle on this, getting people to dress nicer when they travel and demand that people be nice when they're at the airport. And I would argue as well that airlines have a role to play in this, as they have squeezed in more seats and there's little to no food and sometimes even drink service on board any longer. And it's go, go, go and turn around that plane and get out of there. So I think there's a lot of aspects to this. But the campaign that the Department of Transportation is going with is they're asking you to dress nicer on board and to be polite when you get on board an airplane.
Is the translation that people are dressing like slobs?
They are.
Well, they are. Yeah, I don't think that. I don't think that's going to change. I think people want to be comfortable now. It's same thing when people used to go to baseball games and they would go in a coat and tie. And I don't think anybody's going back to that. Try to convince somebody on a 6 a.m. flight that they need to be dressed up nicely, I don't think you're going to get very far.
I have my petticoat and corset.
Yes, yes. Now, we don't need the suit coat, but my God, you have to wear flip-flops and maybe take a shower within the first 3 days of you getting on the flight? I mean, it's pretty bad,
Alex. It's a lot of leisure wear and pajamas and all of that kind of stuff, but I don't see that changing anytime soon. That's kind of the era that we live in now.
ABC's Alex Stone. Alex, thank you very much.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
Julie, does it seem ironic to you that Donald Trump's transportation secretary wants Americans to be nice when his boss, The president recently told a reporter, female reporter, asking him a question about Jeffrey Epstein, quiet piggy. He called her piggy. I mean, and this is the same administration that wants us to be nice, and he's calling journalists names. Got in an argument with Mary Bruce, one of the most respected White House correspondents in America yesterday. Called her a terrible person. What world are we living in? What world are we living in where this is okay?
I know. The commander-in-chief isn't behaving himself on Air Force One.
Right.
Quiet piggy? Wow.
I was shocked when I heard that. You sent me that, and you and I were both wondering, is that even real? And it was.
It was real.
It makes me think,
what does he say behind closed doors?
Can you imagine?
No, I don't want to know.
Yeah. It is 3:42 at WTMJ. So the mayor, you've heard this in the newscast, has vetoed a lot of stuff out of the Common Council budget here in Milwaukee. A lot of stuff that would add fire trucks, extend library hours, that sort of thing. One of the aldermen who was front and center in drafting some of these measures that have been stripped out is Peter Bergelis. He is with us up next on WTMJ. Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson has vetoed parts of the council's adopted budget. He says he's fearful of its toll on city taxpayers. People who like the amendments say they were necessary to bring city residents the things that they count on and the things that they need. Alderman Peter Bergelis is with us on the Siding Unlimited WTMJ hotline. Hello, how you doing, Alderman? Thanks for being here.
Hey, John. Great. Thanks for having me.
So here's a couple of the things that were struck down. You probably have a more exhaustive list, but the mayor struck down funding for expanded library hours, fire department equipment, and increased residency incentives for city employees, among other things. Which of these vetoes do you think is most bothersome?
I think they all are, but the one that I authored was the budget amendment for an additional $8 million worth of fire equipment.
Why was that important to you?
Well, the data speaks. I'm a data-driven person, and the data speaks for itself. If we invest $10 million in fire equipment this year and another $10 million next year in the 2027 budget, we will still have two 17-year-old fire engines and three 16-year-old fire engines. 15 years old is the max for fire equipment for national standards nationwide. We know that Milwaukee fire trucks and fire engines get a lot more use than the national average.
I want to know if the mayor's driving a car that's 21 years old. You know him. Does he drive in a car that's 21 years old?
I believe he does not.
So what's the process of overturning it? Do you have to do each one, or can it be all together? And does it have to be a majority vote or more?
So the mayor issued seven different vetoes on different parts of the budget. This is all budget amendments. They're technically not vetoes. They're disapprovals, but the process is very similar, where it will take a supermajority or 10 votes for common council members to override these vetoes.
What's the likelihood that happens? What does your gut tell you? What has the conversation been like?
Well, I'll tell you, this budget amendment for fire truck funding passed with 11 votes, and another co-sponsor was absent from the vote. So we have 12 supporters on the common council for the original budget amendment. The mayor didn't veto all $8 million, right? He had $2 million in funding initially in the regular budget. We added eight. Four of that million was for new borrowing, and four of it was transferring from a DPW project that hasn't started yet, that doesn't need the money yet. That's what the mayor vetoed, that $4 million transfer from the electrical services building. We certainly need that project. We need that building to be replaced, but we don't have to spend money on it this year. That project already has $9 million ready to go from an insurance settlement from when the recycling building burned down. That's more than enough to get started on the project when the project has a location, has a construction drawing, and a real budget. Then I know the council will be more than happy to fund it. Until then, we have much bigger priorities that need funding, that need that $4 million, like fire trucks.
Were the margins for passage also at 11 or 12 for expanded library hours, increased residency incentives for city employees, or are some of those tighter?
That had actually more support.
Okay, so then less than a week from now, you get together the 25th. I'm surprised because the mayor is very pragmatic that he would veto these when or displace them or whatever the term is when he knows there were enough votes initially to get this put into the budget anyhow. Do you expect that these will all get put back in the budget?
I think that there's a concentrated effort to be mindful of property taxes, right? This year's proposed budget from the mayor increased property taxes to increase the tax levy 3.9%. 2 point something is usually pretty average for Milwaukee's portion of the property tax bill year to year. And of course, MPS's portion of that exploded with the referendum last year. But this year, the mayor proposed 3.9. The council added 1 point something% to that. So it's a very small increase on property taxes. Most people's property taxes citywide are going to be affected more from their new assessment than from property tax levies.
So the mayor wrote an open letter to common council members. That includes you, Milwaukee Alderman Bergelis. And he asked pointedly, are the changes sustainable? So he was asking about the additional 1% increase in residency, for example, and incentives for city employees. He wrote in a paragraph, is there a way we can explore other ways to do incentives than that money? Did you come up with any ideas with that?
Well, there were a number of discussions during the budget process, but the council settled on a residency bump. We have general city employees live in the city. About 75% of general city employees are city residents. Okay. When you get into sworn employees, fire department and MPD, those numbers are drastically different. I think it's important to maintain that city residents are keeping us safe and protecting us and doing vital city services, and that city employees are working and protecting and maintaining the city that they live in.
So the mayor's veto is also aimed to restore a position that had its funding cut in the city's Office of Innovation. Is it important that that be put back in?
Well, that position was authorized as a substitute position from a budget office analyst back in January. The council never authorized funding for that position. The mayor's office waited until the August recess to fill it as a backfill when we were out of session.
It just seems to me, I know I keep coming back to it, but how can we be talking about a position in the Office of Innovation? How can we be talking about the funding, the Hip Hop Week and Big Clean and all that when we have fire trucks that are 20 years old and you have a fire chief basically saying that the city is less safe because of that? Is that how the discussion goes behind closed doors?
There are a lot of conversations and a lot of priorities. The fire department budget amendment is the largest budget amendment in common council history for $8 million. And still, that is only 2/5 of 1% of the $2 billion budget that the city has each year. The other smaller projects are certainly important. They make an impact that is multiplied by the cost to taxpayers. But in the big picture of the $2 billion city budget, it's a very small impact.
I wanted to switch gears, if we could, and ask you about something else that's going to come up on November 25th. Alderman Peter Bergelis is with us. The council is poised to vote on a new contract for the city's rank-and-file police officers on November 5th. It seems that finally there was some agreement with some parties. Will this pass? Will there be a lot of discussion?
I think there will be a lot of discussion on the floor. We had a lot of discussion earlier this week in the finance committee. It's a $51 million contract. I think it's a good idea that we added that fourth year to the contract, because that means that there'll be labor peace until the end of 2026, and we can take our time to be diligent and make a concentrated effort to come up with a fair contract for 2027 and beyond. We don't have to all of a sudden go back into not having a contract. Will it pass? I really do hope it will. Have I counted the votes on it? or do I know that some of my colleagues will vote against it? Probably. But you never know what is going to happen on council day. I thought the flag was going to pass last year, too.
So you really think there's a chance that this police contract, this $51 million four-year contract with a 14% pay raise might not pass?
I haven't. I've talked to a number of my colleagues on it. I have not counted votes to make sure that there's the majority needed to pass. I suspect it will, but I am confident that a number of colleagues will vote against it.
Very interesting. He is Milwaukee Alderman Peter Burgalis. Always makes time for us. We appreciate it. Thank you, Alderman.
Thanks for having me. Have a great day.